welcome back to 14 Connect podcast. Today we had another really interesting guest. His name is David Cohen. He has been a teacher, consultant at multinational corporations multiple times. He now owns his own consulting company, teaching and coaching executives of corporations on leadership. He's also studied behavioral psychology of humans and organization. He has really interesting insights about how different cultures play a role in the expectation toward leaders. So I hope you guys also learn from today's episode. So enjoy.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, perfect. So I wanted to jump on our questions. And the first question I prepared for you is, how do companies create collaborative work environment for coworkers, employees, and employers, like all of them together as a team? How do you usually advise companies to create collaborative environment?
Collaborative environments depends on what you want out of the collaboration. But if I want somebody to be involved and feel safe, because one thing that every employee anywhere in the world, and as I mentioned to you earlier, I've worked all over the world. Mm-hmm. One thing that we all want is to feel safe, mm-hmm. trusted, and respected. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't feel respected, we don't feel that the management is going to trust us, we're not going to cooperate. So the way to do that, it's up to management to give to have the empathy that's needed to approach employees so the employees feel that the manager cares about them, mm-hmm. and is listening to them and trusts them. It doesn't mean that they have to do, that the manager has to do what they want to do, mm-hmm. the employee. It means that the manager has taken the time either to explain why something has to get done in the big picture, mm-hmm. not just the piece of work, mm-hmm. or they have actually listened to the employees and gotten the employees' opinions and have integrated some of the things the employees want into the work that they're doing. So mm-hmm. it's cooperation is a two-way street. Mm-hmm. It's not one way. So it really depends on how the environment and the culture of the organization, because there are organizations where it's very much successful when it's top down. Mm-hmm. And so senior management makes decisions, but they have followers that like that. Mm-hmm. But if they have followers who want to be engaged and involved and have a say, mm-hmm. then it needs a different type of leadership style. However, the leadership style is not going to change for the sake of change. Mm-hmm. They have to be very careful and hire people that fit the behaviors of success in the organization. And mm-hmm. most organizations pay attention only to the skill, knowledge, and experience that people have. Mm-hmm. And they don't pay enough attention to the behaviors that they bring to work. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about it, mm-hmm. And you reflect on it, people are hired for their technical knowledge. Mm-hmm. They're hired for their education. Mm-hmm. They're promoted because of their success, and they're fired because of interpersonal behavior. Mm-hmm. And so, but yet most organizations around the globe today still do not properly hire for behavior. And then managers wonder why the employee is not being cooperative, not being innovative, not being successful. Mm-hmm. So they really have to understand, mm-hmm. what is their organization's culture? What are the behaviors for success? Mm-hmm. And it can have many different, there's no one correct set of behaviors. Mm-hmm. Every organization has its own sort of DNA, its own imprint.
Mm. So I have a following question with that. Sure. Like, is there any sort of, you know, testing method or matrix that you recommend for people to use when they want to measure some sort of, you know, common, yes. DNA? Yeah. Or,
Well, you have to identify, take the time. Mm. And there's a lot of organizations, consultants that will sell you these programs off the shelf to say, pick from this laundry list of 64 different behaviors, which ones fit your organization. Mm-hmm. But there are many organizations, especially in Asia, that have gone to these Western consultants, use their list, only to find out they don't work. They don't work because the nuance of behavior is different. So you need, organizations need to say, what have the highly successful people done in our organization? How do they act differently from the successful people? What do the highly successful people do that's unique? And engage those people in expressing what they do, how they act, how they behave. And then once those are identified, to use those as your tool for measuring at the interview, at performance reviews, especially at promotion, what are the characteristics that lead to success? We know that somebody does acts a certain way repeatedly will be successful in our organization. Somebody who does those behaviors less frequently will be less successful. Somebody who doesn't do those behaviors at all will not be successful. So there's all sorts of different testing people use. I'm not a fan of psychometric testing because most psychometric testing has been designed in the United States based on US culture. And the results, though, they have been used around the world and they're transferable. There's no real validity to that. There's no real studies done because whenever you use a language, as you will know, when you translate the language, the original to a new language, it depends on who is doing the translation. And that person brings their interpretation to those words. And they can have a different nuance. I'll give you an example of, you know, one of the things that is one of the many most common words when you look at organizations, when they look at organization culture, is respect. But respect means different things to different people. So if, and when I was in Asia, one of the engineers who'd been trained in the United States explained it to me very well. He, I'll put it a little differently than he did. If I were, if I had an idea, if my manager has an idea and they bring that idea forward and I disagree with the idea and I'm in Asia, the general reaction is everybody will nod their head, which I have learned means in Asia, I heard you, but don't necessarily agree with you. So it's not yes, which is misinterpreted in the rest of the world as yes. So there's a big problem there when you start to cross boundaries. Then they, but they won't necessarily agree with them. And they might do something that they want to do behind the back just as long as they get the results. So respect is deference to senior management, deference to those who are older, deference to those who are on higher levels in the organization when there's a hierarchy. That would be Asia. That's respect. If I go to the Gulf region, whether it's Saudi Arabia or the United Arab Emirates or any of those Kuwait, and I say that we want to do something, my boss is going to know that I need to socialize that because of the tribal history with everybody else that's impacted by it. So I'm not even, even though the boss gave me permission to do it, I'm not going to begin the work until I've gotten everybody's understanding of what it is and can go back to my boss and say, I've got everybody on side. So things might take a little longer. In the United States, and particularly US companies, respect means if the boss brings something up in the meeting, somebody in the meeting without raising their hand, without being acknowledged, will just say, I think that's really stupid. We should do something else. Now the boss, if they did that in Asia, nobody ever talked to them again. If they did that in the Gulf region, they'd be fired. But in the United States, if they don't express their difference of opinion openly with management, and management finds out later they had a better idea, they'll be in trouble for not having shared their opinion openly in front of people. So every culture, every country is impacted by the historic geographic culture that they live in. And when companies go overseas, if they bring their culture without understanding the local culture, and act towards their employees the way they acted where they were from,
mm-hmm.
they offend the local population. So I often, when I'm dealing with executives in Southeast Asia, where I work frequently, mm-hmm. I say, you have to be schizophrenic. You have to know that you have to act with a certain set of behaviors towards your American corporate headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
But those behaviors will offend your local direct reports because they don't understand it that way. So you got to act differently locally. Mm. So you have to be able to balance those things and understand them. And it's not easy. It's not easy.
Right. You would feel frustrated if you...
Well, the... Yeah, at some point the employees, I dealt with different Japanese-based companies here in Canada and the United States,
mm-hmm.
and the Canadian and U.S. employees,
mm-hmm.
when they are treated as if they haven't left Japan,
mm-hmm.
the leadership, because they're all from Japan originally,
mm-hmm.
they all come from head office, when they act towards the local population,
mm-hmm.
as if they're still home,
mm-hmm.
they offend or distance themselves,
mm-hmm.
and don't get the support and buy-in. So one of the things, you know, that you talk about is, if I want to get cooperation between people, get ideas generated,
mm-hmm.
acting towards them without respecting their local culture, their local history. It's mm-hmm. like when I was in Saudi Arabia and mm-hmm. I was doing a session and I crossed my leg, but in crossing my leg, I showed the bottom of my shoe, which I know is offensive in that, that's an insult in that community.
Oh.
One of the gentlemen came to me during the break and said, don't cross your legs again. And if you cross your legs, notice how we cross our legs and we don't lift our foot. We just sort of slide it over. So mm-hmm. nobody sees the bottom of your shoe. And I was, even though I was aware of it, and even mm-hmm. though I knew that in advance,
mm-hmm.
I still did it.
Mm.
So there's a lot. Now, it's very interesting. The Roman Empire, when it started to expand, it did something very interesting.
Mm.
It always left local leadership in place to maintain the local environment and local culture.
Mm.
The Roman Empire began to implode and fall apart when Rome started to centralize control. And I think that historically, that's a really important lesson that we have to understand, that not every place, not every corporation
mm-hmm.
has the same set of values. And even if you call them the same things, like mm-hmm. respect,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing.
Mm.
And therefore, there has to be a certain sensitivity that gets to that. Which, you know, you talk about, you gave me a question for later, which is on EQ, emotional intelligence.
Mm.
Emotional intelligence really is, how do I plug into the feelings of somebody else
mm-hmm.
and put my feelings aside
mm-hmm.
to allow myself to respond to the person the way they want to be responded to?
Mm-hmm.
See, in emotional intelligence has become another psychometric test.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional intelligence has taken way beyond its original form.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the four quadrants and there's all that good stuff. But really what emotional intelligence is saying,
mm-hmm.
that I have to know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I have to know my strengths and my limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be aware of the environment that I'm in to know how to adjust myself to be successful in that environment, not to expect the environment to adjust to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional intelligence is the ability to understand the other person. You know, it's the old saying, to walk a mile in somebody's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
If I can walk a mile in their shoes and still behave the way I want to and offend them,
mm-hmm.
I have no emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
If I can walk in their shoes and empathize and understand them and mm-hmm. therefore modify the words I use,
mm-hmm.
change the behaviors I demonstrate towards them,
mm-hmm.
so they feel comfortable with me and trust, expect that word trust. Trust mm-hmm. me, I will be successful in winning them over, communicating with them, and having them have a sense that I care about them.
Mm-hmm.
That's emotional intelligence to me.
Mm-hmm.
So emotional intelligence, you know, you can study all the different quadrants and all the different behaviors that go with each one. But to me, what it all boils down to, mm-hmm. are you self-aware mm-hmm. that you're able to adjust your actions, words, behaviors mm-hmm. to meet the needs of those so other people listen to you? Because if you don't, they're not going to listen to you. And if they don't listen to you, there's no communication. If there's no communication, nothing gets done.
So I think I'm going to move on to the next question, which is something that we kind of touched a little bit. But the second question I wanted to ask, how can we implement right amount of democracy in an organization while balancing it with getting stuff done?
There's an assumption there that a democracy doesn't get things done. Mm-hmm. Now, that would be a very, you know, in Asia, there is a, as I talked before, there is a hierarchy and mm-hmm. organizations generally are not democratic. Mm-hmm. So the question is democracy the right way of behaving within that culture? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't want a democracy. Maybe what you want mm-hmm. is an openness to ideas. Maybe what you want is to say, see, what everybody wants, mm-hmm. I don't care if you're my age mm-hmm. or younger. Mm-hmm. What everybody wants is autonomy. Mm-hmm. They want to know that they have the freedom to do the thing the way they want to do it without their boss standing next to them and telling them every 2 seconds to do it differently. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this concept of empowerment, this concept of autonomy has to be, is measured. It's not total freedom, all right? What it is I, the manager, have to give you a clear set of expectations. Mm-hmm. This is what it's going to look like when it's over. This is the budget you have. This is the deadline you have. Mm-hmm. There's 10 different ways of getting there. You mm. might have an 11th way. Let's figure out what you think is the best way of getting it done. Because if I say to you, mm. I want you to do it this way, mm-hmm. and Nasumi says to me, or you come to me and say, I want to do it this way, and I say no, how do you feel? But if I say, no, you don't feel very good.
No.
But, you know, we've done it that way before. It never worked. We did it 10 years ago that way. It didn't work. That's not our, you know, that's not our standard operating procedure. And so now you're feeling really bad. You're feeling embarrassed, especially in Japan, because mm-hmm. you brought it to somebody who's more senior and they said no. Mm-hmm. So now you feel like, oh, you lost a little bit of face. Mm-hmm. Instead of the boss who says, mm-hmm. and it will work, I think, in Japan, mm-hmm. is because that's where Kaizen came from and all these other ideas that have been adopted by the West is, okay, these are the rules. This is what we need done. This is the budget you have. And if you run into any obstacles or need any help, come get me. Mm. And how do you want me to check in with you? Mm. So I feel comfortable you're making progress. Mm-hmm. Now you go do it. Now here's the trick. I've now given you the authority to do this mm-hmm. the way you want to do it. Mm-hmm. What's the consequence in your mind if it's not successful?
Horrible, like terrifying.
But you see, if I was your boss and told you what to do and said, I mm-hmm. want you to do A, B, C, and D, these are the times I want you to do it, and it doesn't work out, you can blame me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if I said, assuming you do this the way you want to do it, mm-hmm. here's some ideas, you know, blend them together, come up with your own ideas, ask me for help, ask me for ideas. If you, somebody's giving you a hard time, I'll remove that obstacle for you, but mm-hmm. get it done. Mm-hmm. Now, you've come up with that idea. If it doesn't work out, who feels bad?
The employee.
Yeah, the employee. So the employee doesn't want to feel bad, so they're going to make it work. Mm-hmm. So it's not really democracy. Mm-hmm. It's the, I call it guided autonomy, guided democracy, guided empowerment, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. to work within certain clear, mm-hmm. defined boundaries that say, you have the freedom to achieve this, the way you want to achieve it, as long as the end result does this or is better than this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you figure out a way of getting it done. I'm here to help you. As opposed to, okay, you got to get this done. Here's the goal. My boss asked me to do this. I want you to do it. Mm-hmm. Go do it and talk to me when it's done. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, where do I begin? Mm-hmm. What do I work with? Who do I talk to? But if I gave you those directions, mm-hmm. I said, these are your resources. These are the people you can call upon. Mm-hmm. Now go out and talk to them and build a plan and come back to me with a plan you feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
You own the plan. So I don't think that any organization is truly a democracy.
Mm, I see.
It can't be. Mm-hmm. Because there is always, you know, in team dynamics,
mm-hmm.
if I take a leader out of the team,
mm-hmm.
a new leader appears.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's no such thing as a self-directed team.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear about these self-directed teams, and I always kind of smile because leaders always emerge in teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that team is given a goal and an objective by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're making, you know, airplane parts and the boss says you have the freedom and democracy to do whatever you want, mm-hmm. and they decide they're going to make jewelry with the metal instead, the boss comes to them a week later and said, where's the wing to the plane? Oh, mm-hmm. no, we made a lot of money selling jewelry in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that isn't going to work.
I see a point. Okay, so I'm gonna actually move on to the second and the next question. What does it mean to have a high EQ as a leader in cross-cultural team, which we kind of
we touched upon that bit. But I really, just to reinforce that, I think a high EQ means that you have the awareness and the sensitivity to understand other people, who where they are,
mm-hmm.
and how they behave, and not make demands of them or ask them to do things or speak to them in a way that they feel is demeaning. It goes back to the concept, treat other people the way you want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also is treat other people the way they want to be treated.
Mm.
So with IQ, it's EQ, it's do if I am for myself alone, if I am the manager and I am the boss and I only think about myself,
mm-hmm.
who am I? What am I? Mm-hmm. But if I am the boss, mm-hmm. who says, I am not for myself alone,
mm-hmm.
but I also am for others,
mm-hmm.
then I'm demonstrating that emotional acuity to allow myself to understand what do I have to do to help the other person be successful.
Mm.
So the boss who says, I am the boss and I am, you know, I am for myself, I am always right, nobody is going to argue with me, and it's my way or it's no way.
Mm-hmm.
That's the boss that's going to lose everybody.
Mm.
And whether it's local in your home country or whether it's when you go overseas and you bring your company overseas, if you're bringing your company overseas,
mm-hmm.
and you're using local employees,
mm-hmm.
you have to understand them from where they're coming at, and you have to communicate with them to get them engaged in your passion.
Mm-hmm.
What is your passion? What is your purpose? What is your vision,
mm-hmm.
that excites them? And if you can talk to them and build that excitement,
mm-hmm.
if you can tell them the roadmap for success, mm-hmm. is demonstrating these behaviors that are consistent with what's within the realm of reality in that culture,
mm-hmm.
then you're very successful. So if you leave Japan and come to the United States,
mm-hmm.
and you expect people, especially as things evolve, to wear a suit and tie,
mm-hmm.
if you expect people to just nod their head yes and agree with you all the time and not give their opinion and not grow,
mm-hmm.
and not give development opportunities, you're not going to get people's heart and soul. They might love your purpose, but they're not going to want to work in that environment because their values and your values are completely different. Mm. And that's where the key is. That's where the key for success is. Mm. And I see that all the time, that companies around the world, mm-hmm. multinational companies, mm-hmm. international companies, mm-hmm. when they don't, are not successful. When you look at Johnson & Johnson, mm-hmm. they have 250 subsidiaries, over mm-hmm. 200,000 employees around the world mm-hmm. that all act according to the credo. Mm-hmm. It's because every employee mm-hmm. is introduced to the credo mm-hmm. on day one. They're asked to read it before they come to work the first day. Mm-hmm. They understand that the right way of behaving mm-hmm. with people internal to the organization mm-hmm. is the credo. So here's the key point. Mm-hmm. If I don't have employees, if I don't have the emotional intelligence mm-hmm. to create a positive employee experience, mm-hmm. meaning one where the employees feel that the behaviors of the organization are consistent and predictable, mm-hmm. all right, they will then, if they're not in line with that, they go off and treat your customers any way they want. Mm-hmm. And now you're getting upset because they're not acting correctly. Mm-hmm. But if there is a positive employee experience, mm-hmm. where people know exactly how to behave, where to behave, and what to do for success internally, mm-hmm. and they feel trusted and safe mm-hmm. internally, they'll act that way externally. So you cannot create good customer environments, good customer relations, mm-hmm. unless you first have good employee relations. That's where I do my work. Mm-hmm. My work is with leaders in ensuring that the employee experience mm-hmm. is successful. A lot of people make a mistake and think that employee engagement activities are employee experience, and they're not. Mm-hmm. Having parties, having sleep pods, mm-hmm. having beer on Friday afternoon, having different sporting contests, mm-hmm. they're all fun. Mm-hmm. But that's not what they talk about when they go home. Mm-hmm. What they talk about is how their boss treated them when they got home. That's the employee experience. Mm. And when the employee experience is right, you don't have to spend a lot of money on other things. Mm-hmm. But those are band-aids because the employee experience isn't good. Mm. So therefore, they try to have employee engagement activities. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm not trusted by my, I don't feel my boss trusts me. Mm-hmm. I don't feel my boss respects me. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much good food I get at work for free. Mm-hmm. Right. What I care about is how my boss treats me and how, I go home and I'm not worried about, my boss is going to yell at me tomorrow or not. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a really important thing. Toyota has done this. When Toyota moved to the United States, mm-hmm. the first person they hired was the director of HR. Mm-hmm. And that director of HR focused on the behaviors of success in Toyota. Mm. And then did hiring according to those behaviors. Mm-hmm. We can teach all the skill and knowledge we want, mm-hmm. but we're not going to be able to teach people's change people's behaviors. Mm-hmm. So if we can focus on those things and create that employee experience, mm-hmm. we will create a healthy organization wherever you go in the world. And, I do work with a company in Singapore, mm-hmm. which is an international cosmetic company, mm-hmm. and they had turnover over 100% because the leadership never lived the values. They would say one thing and do something else. It was a horrible employee experience. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Go on.
So one of the things you mentioned, like the consequence of horrible employee experiences, that they would directly reflect that experience with their customers too, right? Like, is there anything else you would say? Like, what the other consequences of horrible?
Oh, yeah. How many people they talk to at home and friends and where they socialize about how horrible it is to work here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you got to think about this. When I'm going to recruit somebody,
mm-hmm.
my employer brand, the employer mm-hmm. brand, the outside image, has been with this person since they're 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's influenced by what their friends, neighbors, and relatives say. It's influenced about the press that organization gets.
Mm.
It's influenced by a lot of things saying whether I want to work there or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, I really scare people when I do a presentation on employee experience. Mm. I ask people, what's one of the companies around the world everybody wants to work with?
Mm-hmm.
And they say Google.
Yeah, that's what I hear,
Google is a horrible place to work.
That's Google, what they
want? Mm-hmm. Google is a terrible place to work. Google is high demand. Mm-hmm. They expect you to be there 12 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care if you come in at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working on a project in Sydney, Australia, uh-huh. and the corporation decides it's going to be one of their key projects,
mm-hmm.
they're going to move it to the head office in Washington. And if you don't leave Sydney, you lose the project. It's no longer your project.
Mm-hmm.
They did things when they entered, they were more interested in making money
mm-hmm.
than they were, you know, their motto is to do no harm. When they went into China,
mm-hmm.
they gave the government IP addresses of everybody online
mm-hmm.
and got dissidents arrested. Does that do no harm? No, that's doing a lot of harm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a good thing. So they have an image
mm-hmm.
because everybody looks at, you know, the slide in the office and the basketball court and the good food and
mm-hmm.
they got a bank and a dentist and a dry cleaning and mm-hmm. all that. Everybody says, wow, this is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But is it really cool?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The global VP of government relations
mm-hmm.
last year resigned because he felt the company did not live up to its values.
Wow, I didn't know that. There's a whole lot.
Just because you're on the list as the best place to work, mm-hmm. all it means is you're a good place to work for the people who work there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the same values and behaviors,
mm-hmm.
you don't have the same passion for that product,
mm-hmm.
it's not a good place for you to work.
Mm-hmm.
I always look at these lists and say, well, is it really a good place to work? Or is it a fun place to work?
Mm-hmm.
Because, or is there something else?
Mm-hmm.
What are they trying to hide because they're giving out so much free stuff?
Mm-hmm.
They have to be compensating for something. Because right. you have teachers
mm-hmm.
who have nurses, especially mm-hmm. in the world today, that work for very little money,
mm-hmm.
but are more passionate than anybody will ever meet.
Mm.
It's not the money.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's a difference. And this is what people have to understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what I do. What I do is mm-hmm. not who I am.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
What I do for a living
mm-hmm.
is not necessarily who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can find a job that has both combined,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very lucky that I have, all right, then yeah, you feel great about it. It's not work. That's why I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, to me, it's trying to make the world a better place for employees. So, you know, that's what I do. I work with leaders to say, listen, your strategy is great,
mm-hmm.
but if you don't have followers behind you, mm-hmm. that strategy is not going to get executed.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you get there? How mm-hmm. do you, when you move from one country to the other?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure that you're going to have followers mm-hmm. that understand you? And that gets back to the emotional intelligence piece. Are you sensitive enough to mm-hmm. change your thinking to respect the behaviors of those people, the local geographic behaviors, in mm-hmm. order to be successful? You'll win them over. And they will eventually come your way.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to start from where they're at.
Right. And they have to, like, do you say that, like, it's a long time process? Like, do you say that when a company...
7 years.
Hmm?
It takes 7-8 years for people to sort of move, make that. See, values are embedded in us by the time we reach late adolescence, early 20s.
Mm.
Our values do not change as we grow older. They evolve very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So I always get upset when consultants say, we're going to help you change your corporate culture.
Mm-hmm.
To change culture means to change values.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't change values. So the culture's not changing, the strategy's changing.
Mm-hmm.
The way to make a strategic change successful is base it on your existing values. Celebrate your values
mm-hmm.
as a foundation for making the strategy change. So becoming more customer focused
mm-hmm.
is a strategy change. It's not a values change, because your value of respect or dignity or whatever it might be isn't going to change.
Mm.
You're just focusing it now on customer service, you'll be more successful.
Mm-hmm.
But to say, well, what are the new values to help the strategy be successful, and all your employees are running to hide behind something
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to behave that way. That's not what's been rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
Because the founder of the organization puts in place the DNA of the values.
Mm, yeah, I very much agree with that. I think
and therefore, no change.
Mm, I see. So I think I'm going to move on to my very last question, which
please.
Is, so I think that as much as we spoke about, you know, being a leader who has a high EQ, is all about making employees' first experience, where you as a leader always try to care about the employees' values and what they want first, right? But then, once again, you also, as a leader, you also have this pressure of like having to get things done. So there's certain levels of like freedom you need to give to the followers, but then at the same time, like the responsibilities all fall on you. Like it's everything, it's your fault. Like, and I came across to some leaders, myself as well, where I definitely saw the dilemma and struggle, because he just wanted to be a good person, and he's a good person. But then in this very stressful environment, he has all these deadlines and, you know, employees are hating on him and everything. Like he just really, you know, even if he was a good person, like he was not a very good leader for people because he was just so stressed out. So that being said, my question is like, how can a leader deal with like being hated by followers to basically get things done, but then be okay with it and, you know, basically balance between, you know, the pressure of having things get done and then also leading other people?
Well, a leader can't be hated because he won't have any followers.
Say one more time.
So I don't think a leader can be hated
because uh-huh.
they won't have any followers.
Mm.
All right. Nobody's going to come to work. That's the bad employee environment.
Mm-hmm.
Leader, a good leader
mm-hmm.
sets out expectations
mm-hmm.
and sets out consequences with those expectations.
Mm.
When we think of the word consequences, we usually think about it being negative.
Mm-hmm.
But consequences are also positive.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the positive consequences
mm-hmm.
if we get this done?
Mm-hmm.
What are the negative consequences?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that leaders, and I know that it sounds different what I was talking about before, leaders also have to understand that they're the ones that are paid the extra money to make the tough decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was working with a company in Asia that would not fire anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whoever worked there, and the CEO said, you can't fire that person. They kept moving this person around, and now he'd been there for 25 years. He basically was directing traffic in the parking lot, but he wouldn't fire him.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to think about the impact that has on other employees.
Mm-hmm.
What's the impact that has if you don't have the courage
mm-hmm.
to say to somebody, you're not being successful. We'll try to find a place you can be successful, or you got to move on.
Mm.
Because that person is never going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And that person is going to send the message to other people
mm-hmm.
that it's okay not to do your work. You still have your job.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do as a leader, mm-hmm. it's not to be not liked. It's to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And say these and communicate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was told by one of my mentors many years ago when I got into the consulting business, he said, good leaders do three things. They communicate.
Mm.
And if they're not sure they understand it, they communicate again. And they find different ways of communicating. And they find different ways of listening and making sure the communication's been heard the way they want it to be heard. And so if you are setting out clear expectations, like we talked about before,
mm-hmm.
you're setting out clear positive consequences and negative consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You're offering to help people if they run into trouble, but also hold people accountable. You see, I always joke that there's something called the corporate salute.
Mm-hmm.
The corporate salute is blame them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so-and-so didn't give me the work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They didn't, you know, they went home early.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all right. If you're accountable,
mm-hmm.
you will find a different way of getting that information. If you're responsible, you'll get the work done. So leaders
mm-hmm.
have to stand up and say, here's the line. But they have to do it. It's sort of like, you know, the expression, speak softly and carry a big stick. Because you've got to be able to communicate clearly.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to make sure people understand what you want. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that you never, ever violate your values. You got to make sure that you never make a decision that would put one of your values in question
mm-hmm.
because you're predictable. Think about this. If I played a popular song for you right now,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't finish it,
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen in your head?
Why did he stop?
and in your head, you'll sing the rest of the song.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
If one shoe drops, you're waiting for the second shoe to drop. When that predictability is in place, that I always know
mm-hmm.
that this leader always yeah. behaves this way, always reacts to these behaviors this way, mm-hmm. and I am certain of it, I know the consequences if I don't do it. So when, and I've seen this happen, organizations have gone after big contracts. But to get the contract, they'd have to do something that the organization says violates their values.
Mm-hmm.
They walk away from the contract. And they get huge support by their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Who then go out and find other work and probably do better than they've ever thought they could do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do that contract and everybody knows you shouldn't do it,
mm-hmm.
you just ruined your integrity. And integrity, all to me, my definition of integrity is the sum total of living your values.
Mm-hmm.
You have integrity when you live your values. So mm-hmm. a leader, if they live their values,
mm-hmm.
communicate, set clear expectation, have mm-hmm. a passionate future, and hold people accountable. Don't allow people to play the blame game and the excuse management.
Mm-hmm.
Then people will have respect for a leader that does that,
mm-hmm.
not fear. They have fear of a leader who says one thing and does something else.
Mm-hmm.
They have fear of a leader who says, I want this done. And then all of a sudden you come to work and it's done and you spent all weekend doing it. And they say, I don't really need it until next week.
mm-hmm.
Why did I do it? You know,
yeah.
probably mm-hmm. stupid. I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, but if the leader says, oh yeah, not only do I need it, thank you very much. I want you to make the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden the person feels really great.
Mm-hmm.
But the person also knew if they didn't get it done, that leader wasn't going to tolerate it.
Mm.
That's why they work so hard to get it done.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that answers your question, but mm-hmm. I don't think people should fear their leaders
uh-huh.
because when there's fear, there's bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
People sabotage things. People mm-hmm. make things not work on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And leaders have to understand that.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But when they give clear directions, they set out their values clearly, mm-hmm. they behave consistently,
mm-hmm.
they'll be very successful and be around a long time.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to actually wrap up this interview by asking you the final question. Can you tell me a little bit about the services you offer to the companies and also where people can find you?
Yeah. The services I offer is I work with senior leaders on corporate values,
mm-hmm.
Business ethics, defining the behaviors around those values. I always call it when organizations have strayed away from their values and things aren't going so well, I always call it a back to the future exercise. Mm-hmm. How do we get back to the values that made us successful? How do we get back to those behaviors? I work with organizations. I have developed a process for structured behavioral interviewing. So you hire for fit to values. I work on all those aspects of talent management. How do you do agile, meaningful performance management? For instance, how do I help you develop, not have feedback that catches you do something wrong,
mm-hmm.
but how do I catch you do something, help you do something right and catch you doing something right? I help on succession planning with promotional processes, succession planning. Mm-hmm. So all of the talent management activities and the work is around behaviors. So the world would be a better place to work in. They can reach me at my website which is brand new. We just put it up this week.
Nice. Congratulations.
Is sagltd.com.
Mm-hmm.
So it's saglimited.com. Mm-hmm. On there's a video of a session I did in April mm-hmm. on the difference between employee experience and employee engagement
mm-hmm.
and why employee experience is so important. Mm-hmm. There's also a short 1-hour video from the same conference on how to hire for fit to culture.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of articles on LinkedIn that I post mm-hmm. about all these subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an open letter to CEOs on that site about their corporate values and their corporate culture.
Sounds good.